Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to AptarGroup's 2017 first quarter conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Introducing today's conference call is Mr. Matt DellaMaria, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and welcome everyone. Participating on the call today are Stephan Tanda, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Bob Kuhn, Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Secretary. Stephan will begin our call with a brief overview of our quarterly performance. Bob will then discuss a few financial details, and we'll open it up for questions. Information that will be discussed on today's call includes some forward-looking comments. Actual results or outcomes could differ from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. Please refer to Aptar's SEC filings to review factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. We will post a replay of this conference call on our website. Aptar undertakes no obligation to update the forward-looking information contained therein. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Stephan.
Thank you, Matt, and good morning, everyone. Over the past 90 days, I've had the privilege to engage with many of you, our stakeholders, customers, investors, and employees at our facilities around the world to better understand how we can further build on Aptar's pillars of strength. We really have great people, excellent technologies, and the industry's broadest portfolio of dispensing and sealing solutions. We are seen by many of our customers as a trusted partner to help them grow their business. Our overall business strategy is sound, even though there is work to be done to ensure we protect and grow our existing market positions and that we aggressively seek out and win new business. One of our top priorities is to evaluate and realign our sales and marketing efforts to ensure we become even more customer-focused and driven to earn their business at every turn. For example, in our Beauty and Home segment, where we have struggled to grow sales in recent quarters, we are making several leadership changes. In North America, we are replacing the regional commercial leadership. In addition, in Europe, we recently hired a new vice president of sales, and we are strengthening our talent base in Asia. We are also reinforcing our key account management by adding new talent, and we are refreshing our sales process to improve the targeting and execution of our new business development within each business segment. I will briefly comment on our results before I turn it over to Bob for some additional details. We grew the top line 3% on a core basis, driven by excellent growth in our Pharma segment and modest growth in our Beauty and Home segment, and the comparable earnings per share increased 9%. Looking at our segment results, Beauty and Home's core growth during the quarter was partly due to increased sales to the personal care market in Europe and Asia. However, we continue to face challenging conditions in the U.S. personal care and beauty markets, where sales declined. During the quarter, we participated in several global beauty product launches, including Estée Lauder's new Revitalizing Eye Gel, global beauty, Estée Lauder's Revitalizing Eye Gel, which features our Skin Master Cool Touch applicator. We continue to expand into the growing color cosmetics market, and our dispensers were selected for two new global liquid foundations by Coty and LVMH. In Europe, L'Oréal selected our Airless Serum Dispenser for a new professional haircare product, and the Miracle-Gro brand is using our dispensing pump for a line of plant care products. Moving to Pharma, strong demand across our portfolio of devices, particularly for devices used for allergy treatments, decongestions, and ophthalmics, and for our components sold to the injectables market, drove the excellent results. Early in the quarter, we announced that our Ophthalmic Squeeze Dispenser was the very first and only U.S. FDA-approved multi-dose delivery system for prescription eye treatment formulations without any preservatives. Also, our nasal spray pump was featured on the launch of another generic prescription allergy treatment in the U.S. In addition, we received the first order for our integrated electronic nasal lockout device, which is the first such device approved by the European Medicines Agency following a multi-year development with Takeda Pharmaceuticals. We also entered into a partnership with CaliCare to develop real-time medication management technology using digital monitoring systems. As we announced last year, we are also partnering with Propeller Health to develop a fully integrated, connected meter-dose inhaler. These investments and partnerships reinforce our commitment to developing groundbreaking new technologies for healthcare. Now turning to food and beverage, this segment was again impacted by lower beverage sales volumes in China. Partially offsetting this beverage weakness, we grew in the food market in the condiment category as well as the coffee creamer and granular coffee categories, which was partly helped by the launch of International Delight's One Touch Latte. Pepsi's Life Water, a new premium bottled water in North America, and a new format of Pepsi's G-Active Enhanced Water in Mexico are both featuring after a sports closure. In Latin America, our poor spot closure is found on an updated package of McCormick's mayonnaise. Finally, in China, we helped the infant nutrition producer Feihe to upgrade another infant formula package with our resealable closure and molded in scoop. Looking ahead to the second quarter, our project dialogue with customers remains strong. I'm optimistic that we will continue to grow our business by executing on these customer projects and developing new business. We remain committed to cost containment across our business segments while focusing on key areas such as innovation, sales, marketing, and new business development. In closing, I'm excited about our opportunities for the future and look forward to continuing to meet our stakeholders around the world. At this time, I will turn it over to Bob, who will review some of our financial details.
Thank you, Stefan, and good morning, everyone. I'll briefly cover a few details, and then we will turn it over for questions. In looking at how our business segments performed in the quarter, I'll start with Beauty and Home segment. As you saw in our press release, core sales, excluding Mega Airless and keeping currencies constant, increased 1%, primarily due to growth in the beauty market. Mega Airless added approximately 3% to Beauty and Home's reported sales in the quarter. When we look at profitability, I'm going to be speaking about EBITDA margins. And in the quarter, our Beauty and Home segment achieved an EBITDA margin of 13%, which was slightly less than the prior year. Beauty and Home margins were negatively impacted by approximately $1.5 million of expenses related to an environmental remediation at one of our Brazilian facilities, and approximately $500,000 related to higher resin costs. Looking at sales growth by market on a constant currency basis, sales to the beauty market were up 6% over the prior year. Sales to the personal care market increased 3%, while sales to the home care market decreased 2% from the prior year. Our pharma segment had another excellent quarter, achieving core sales growth of 10% and an EBITDA margin of 35%. Sales to the prescription market increased 8%, primarily driven by increases in demand for our delivery devices for allergy. Sales to the consumer healthcare market increased 18%, driven by strong demand for decongestants and ophthalmic products. Sales to the injection market increased 10% on broad-based global demand. It was a challenging quarter for our food and beverage segment, which was impacted by lower sales volumes in the Chinese beverage market, and core sales decreased 1%. Our EBITDA margin decreased from 18% a year ago to 16%, and about half of that decline is due to the higher resin costs and partially due to product and customer mix. Looking at each market, sales to the food market increased 2%, primarily due to sales in the condiment and coffee creamer categories, while sales to the beverage market decreased 7% due to lower beverage sales volumes in China. Capital expenditures were approximately $35 million in the quarter, and our free cash flow was approximately $6 million, compared to a negative $12 million a year ago. The primary reason for the increase in free cash flow relates to profit growth and an improved working capital situation. Looking at our balance sheet capitalization for the quarter, We repatriated from Europe approximately $260 million, which was primarily used to pay down U.S. revolving credit facilities. On a gross basis, debt to capital was approximately 39%, while on a net basis, it was approximately 29%. And we remain slightly over 1x levered compared to our trailing 12 months adjusted EBITDA. For the full year 2017, we continue to expect depreciation and amortization to be approximately $160 million, and that our capital expenditures will be approximately equal to that amount. Lastly, we expect our effective tax rate for the remainder of the year to be in the range of 26.5% to 27.5%, which includes an estimate for a potential tax benefit related to the new stock-based compensation accounting method. For reference, the tax benefit related to this subject in the first quarter of 2017 was approximately $2.7 million, and this compares to approximately $3.6 million had we adopted in the first quarter of 2016. The full year tax benefit for 2016 would have been approximately $8 million. At this time, Stefan and I will be glad to answer any of your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. Our first question or comment comes from the line of George Staphos from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open.
Thanks, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for the details. I'll ask a few questions and turn it over. I guess the first question I had relates to the beverage market and trends you're seeing in Asia. Can you put a little bit more color in terms of fundamentals you saw in the first quarter and the degree to which this destocking or competitive factor we've been talking about, I guess the last 2 quarters or so prior, is behind you or still in effect for the second quarter? And then I had a couple follow-ons.
Yeah. Thanks, George. Basically, the visibility on this particular situation is still rather limited. Clearly, at some stage, it will have run its course. The customer is qualifying or has qualified a second source, so at some stage it's going to be out of the comparables, but I suspect that it will still be with us for the year.
Okay. Second question I had related to some of the new product initiatives that you mentioned. Can you talk about the e-lockout device for nasal products? You know, can you size it all, what the ramp on something like this might look like over the next couple of years? You know, do you share the benefits with any partners, whether it's Takeda or somebody else? And similar line of questioning with CaliCare, and do you have the opportunity here to take your stake up from 20%? Thanks. I'll turn it over with that.
Yeah, I think in both cases, it is early days, so it certainly would not be sensible to kind of speculate on a ramp up. When you think about the e-lockout, I mean, any kind of drug that where you face the danger of overdosing, whether it's via nasal or via inhalation, can benefit from such an e-lockout so that you can only get a certain dose within a 24-hour period or whatever time period is indicated by the drug. I think it is a quite attractive solution. There are quite a number of drugs that are facing potential abuse, and this is one way to deter that abuse. Now, on CaliCare, this is even earlier days. I mean, basically, when you look at how our customers try to ensure patient compliance, there are different approaches, but by being able to electronically monitor not only whether or not the patient has taken a drug or administered the drug, but whether it has been administered correctly, like the situation with CaliCare, that is of enormous value. First, initially, of course, in the clinical trial setting, but later on in routine patient care, And you can even speculate that it will make outpatient treatment more feasible and ultimately could even contribute to lowering healthcare costs. So there are a lot of opportunities out there, but it's early days. There is a land grab, if you want, going on in this whole digital space. And we are just taking a position so that we are a meaningful partner with our clients and make sure we integrate that with our technologies.
Stefan, thank you for that. I know it's early days, but just some things I'd asked. Do you have the chance over time to take the 20% stake up, or are you pretty much limited there? And are there any sizable partners, you know, on either of these new areas where, you know, let's say it does get to be a large and product category in both cases where, you know, you're giving up a fair amount of the benefit to partners? Thank you.
Yeah, let me at this stage not comment about the ins and outs of the agreement. Clearly, we'll be very conscious that we get our fair share of the value.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Ghansham Panjabi from Baird. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Good morning. So first off, on beauty and home, you know, even sort of adjusting for the two items you called out, margins were down, you know, sort of even with core sales being up a bit. Can you help us bridge the rest of the decline? Is it acquisition dilution or some sort of mix issue? And then just given the top line weakness seems to persist for the segment, can you just update us on your cost initiatives there?
You know, I can take the margin deterioration, Ghansham. You know, we're organized regionally, and when you have one region which is not performing, you know, as expected, like we had in this quarter with North America, you end up with basically some underabsorbed overhead. So that was probably one of the biggest contributing factors beyond the two items that were called out in the resin and the environmental accrual.
Yeah, maybe
on the cost side?
Let me first add on the sales leadership side. Clearly, you have, if I can use an analogy, what is the weather like if you're on a boat, and how do you navigate the weather? And clearly, in personal care, we have a difficult market environment, especially in North America. But we can also set the sales a little stiffer. And so we're clearly addressing the sales execution, new business development execution, while we continue to drive operational excellence and some of the performance in the plants.
Got it. And then on pharmaceuticals, you know, you seem to be sort of pushing towards evolving your footprint towards one that, you know, basically embeds more technology within its products. How should we think about margin evolution, both initially as you ramp up these investments and then also long-term? And do you sort of envision this being the fourth segment within pharma over time? Thanks.
You know, Ghansham, I mean, I would expect over the short to medium term that the margins will be stay fairly consistent because, you know, there will be, you know, investments as we go along, both in people and in technologies. And, you know, for example, with the Kelly Care, we had about $1 million of due diligence and legal costs involved just with that minority transaction. So I think we're going to be trading off between building the proper resources to grow this business and getting additional revenue streams at the same time.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Mark Wilde from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Morning, Mark.
I wondered if we can go back to kind of beauty and home, what you're seeing that's kind of led you to take kind of a cautious view of the second quarter in both North America and in Brazil?
Well, if you think about North America, clearly we're coming off a couple of weak quarters, so I would not expect a complete reversal overnight. Also, as you've seen, consumer data is not too strong in the U.S. Brazil, we face some particular competitive issues, so there we see the economy improving somewhat, hopefully getting to growth next year, but still declining this year. So you have a not overly growing marketplace and continued competitive issues. So we just wanted to flag that we're rather a bit on the cautious side.
Okay. And at this point, Stefan, are you still pretty comfortable with kind of the 3-6% longer-term growth target in this segment?
Yeah. Look, the growth target were the result of a pretty detailed strategy exercise of the leadership team. Looking at our overall portfolio, there's no reason why we shouldn't grow in the mid-single digits. Sometimes you have a little tougher weather that you need to navigate, and sometimes you have some tailwinds. But I don't think there's a big revision to be done.
Okay. And then secondly, I just wondered, in terms of the M&A pipeline, if you can give us a little color on how that looks right now, and whether, you know, we're likely to see a little bit of a pause in activity here as you kind of get yourself situated and maybe we do a little reevaluation of where you want to deploy capital going forward.
I would say the M&A activity continues to be quite active, if I can say it that way, and the team around me continuing to look at deals, and I've gotten up to speed pretty quickly, I think. At the same time, the deal needs to make sense, needs to create value for our shareholders, so don't expect us to be trigger happy, especially at current valuations.
Okay. All right. I'll turn it over. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Adam Josephson from KeyBanc Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Adam.
Bob and Matt, are you wearing your Mitchell Trubisky jerseys yet?
We are not. We are a bit disappointed in that, and we will refuse to take any more questions on that topic next week.
I figured as much. On the quarter, excluding the tax benefit, you guys were at the high end of what you had guided to. Presumably, the strength was in pharma relative to your initial expectations. Can you just highlight what exactly was at the high end of your expectations, presumably in pharma, in the quarter?
Well, I mean, in pharma, we had some tooling sales that, you know, as we've mentioned before, you know, we're never quite sure exactly what quarter some of those are going to fall into. So, I mean, there was a pretty good sales of tooling in the quarter, but we also had some negatives also that were not anticipated. As I mentioned in my remarks, you know, we weren't anticipating $1.5 million on the Brazil environmental impact. And the resin impact actually came in slightly higher than what we had thought. So, you know, there's, I think, throughout the whole thing, and that's the beauty of the diversified business model, we had both positives and negatives kind of hitting us. So I think overall it was a good quarter, you know, if we looked across the broad, you know, product segments.
Okay. And just one more for you, Bob. On FX, what are your assumptions for the quarter?
For second quarter?
Yeah.
Right now we're forecasting at 107 for the euro, which is a spot rate kind of when we pulled it because of the transaction.
Right, okay. And Stefan, can you just talk about your aspirations for expanding over time, which regions are most compelling to you to get bigger in over time and why?
Well, I think it's quite simple when you look at the demographics in the world and our exposure, 6-7% in Asia, and then where the demographics are going and where particularly the growth increments are going. We have some additional work to do in Asia, and that will certainly be a focus, while we'll, of course, continue to build on the positions we have in the, if you want, Western world. I would just leave it at that. When you then get into the segments, each segment is a little bit different. I mean, just as an example, the beverage segment in the Middle East is growing quite rapidly, and it's probably overexpressed there. That has also a little bit to do with the climate. And so in beverage, you might look more in the Middle East. In pharma, you might look a little bit more aggressively in India and so on. So that then, but by and large, to make sure that we are really looking hard at every opportunity that is out there to develop more business and to expand our footprint across Asia and really the high growth economies. So I think you would agree with me that in the long run makes a lot of sense for us.
And what is, and just along those, what do you think your competitive position in Asia is at the moment? I mean, do you have enough scale? Do you have enough resources to have some advantage over time? As we all know, you know, many packaging companies have struggled mightily in China. So can you just talk about the competitive position there that you have?
I mean, China, then, as your question, I was quite impressed looking at our facility in Suzhou. We have about 1,000 people there, active across all three segments. So we have the ability to execute. We have the ability to be relevant with both the multinationals and, in my view, increasingly important, the local companies, whether that's a Petron or whether that's a Yili or that's a Feihe. These companies are rapidly growing, and we have the capability to do that. When it comes to Southeast Asia, there are a few countries where we have a slight footprint, but maybe there are some improvement opportunities, and certainly one question that is on my mind but will be much harder to remedy, if at all, is Japan. It's still a very large economy, and we have some presence in pharma but not in the other segments. But certainly we know how to get things done. We have the talent to get it done, and we certainly have a differentiated technology that will help us to make sure we also earn good money with that top-line growth.
Thanks, Stefan.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Phil Ng from Jefferies. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys. Question for you, Stefan, I guess bigger picture. Can you provide a little more color on the management changes you've made and how your approach on the commercial front will be different? Is it just essentially deploying more resources on the sales effort and then just realigning compensation? Any color would be helpful.
Well, in the end, every function has kind of a way of doing things and doing things well or at world class, and that's no different on sales and marketing excellence. So basically we're just taking a look kind of versus best practice from very basic things on how we're segmenting, how we're running the sales force, how the opportunity pipeline is reviewed, what kind of performance intervals you have to the incentive plan, and so on. And if you want state of the art in Salesforce and commercial management has advanced, and we want to make sure that we are as close to that excellent position as possible, and we certainly have room for improvement there. And that also means that you have leaders in place that can manage the organization in that direction.
Will there be any like ERP implementation to kind of accelerate that process? I'm just asking because that's typically kind of tricky at times.
Sorry, I didn't acoustically hear the first part of your question.
Yeah, will there be any like system-wide or ERP implementation in general as well, just because those have generally been a little tricky for most companies we cover?
Not really. I think we have a good roadmap for our SAP implementation, and we have also a good, reasonably good CRM system that can be expanded, so there's no big bang IT system needed here. This is more about management rhythms and doing things with the right cadence.
Gotcha. And I guess on the margin front, you guys called out higher raw materials. Was any of that tied to metal as well? I know you flagged resin. And just going forward, will you be able to offset that and pass it through in the second quarter? And do you have some cost takeout initiatives in the back half to offset some of these headwinds? Thanks, and good luck in the quarter.
Hey, Phil, I'll take that one. Yeah, there was a little bit of metal increases as well, but by far the biggest piece of our raw material increase was on the resin side. As we typically do on the resin side, we'll be able to pass that through with a delay, but unfortunately we're still seeing resin prices increasing in the first part of the second quarter. So we're actually anticipating a bigger headwind in the second quarter on increased resin effects compared to what we had in the first quarter.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Debbie Jones from Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to start with a question on pharma. You had just mentioned pretty strong consumer healthcare and injectables volumes. Just wanted to get a sense if there was anything one-time in nature there and kind of if that growth is sustainable, you know, going forward this year.
Yeah, Debbie, really can't give you a lot more color. I think the growth was pretty much across the board. Both of the segments that you talked about grew at a pretty good clip, and we expect continued good performance for the remainder of the year. I don't know, Bob, is there...
Yeah, and in the consumer healthcare specifically, I mean, it was very strong in North America, very strong in Eastern Europe, good on, I would say, our core application field like nasal decongestant and things like that. So, I mean, it was just a good, solid performance across our core therapies.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Chris Manuel from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. A couple questions for you. First, repurchase. Did you do any repurchase in the quarter?
We did. We had about 210,000 shares repurchased in the quarter.
All right. I know that the window in first quarter is usually a little smaller than what it is in others, but is there, in the interim, as you're continuing to look at deals, is there any reason, perhaps that as the year progresses here, you don't continue to be pretty active in that front?
You know, well, we're going to be pretty consistent, Chris, as we've been in the past. I mean, we like kind of our dollar cost averaging approach, and as you mentioned, we're typically less in the first quarter due to the extended blackout period. So, I mean, I think we'll be in the market, as we have been in the past, a little bit more in the second, third, and fourth compared to the first.
Okay, that's helpful. The next question I had was kind of bigger picture as you look at or maybe look historically and then thinking about going forward with the pharma segment. You know, that segment always kind of ran at 25 to 30% EBIT margins. That was a long-term target for a number of years. When you had bought Stelmi, I think that business was closer to the 20 range, and that was something that was going to maybe, drag it down for a little bit. But, look, you guys have consistently now got that to the high end and beyond. I just wanted to get a sense of a couple of things. One, perhaps, is it as the business has gotten bigger, it's done it via scale? Has it been via, that you've taken cost out of the business through time? Or how would we think about the progression? I mean, do we have an opportunity for it to continue to get better from here? What are your quick thoughts, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I think it's not one specific thing that we can point to. I think specifically looking at Stelmi, I mean, clearly we were able to be a little bit more cost efficient on some of the plastic injection molding, which wasn't their core competency but is ours. So we moved some of that production into our highly efficient pharma facilities. So, again, there was some cost savings there. We did a better job at improving some of the coatings technologies, right, moving more up into a more higher value-added product range. So, I mean, that's certainly been an emphasis over time. So I think you've seen the average price on some of our products be a little bit higher than what they were pre-purchase of Stelmi. So, I think the pharma business really continues like the rest of the business, which is continuing to look for ways to get more efficient, more productive, whether that's through investments in the factory, automation, higher cavitation tooling, and at the same time, really, as we've done this quarter, continue to invest in the future, so that the investments we're making today are really looking beyond that 7 to 10 year horizon to see what's going to be the growth driver 7 to 10 years from now. So I think they've done a really good job over the years of balancing cost containment improvement, value adding for the customers, and continue to invest for the future.
Okay, that's helpful. Good luck in the quarter, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. We have a follow-up question from the line of George Staphos from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks, guys. A couple follow-ons for me. Environmental remediation in Brazil, it doesn't sound like it's huge, but nonetheless, I wanted to peer into what was the cause of that and whether there's anything else that we need to be mindful of relative to that issue.
So, George, this was the facility where we had the fire at back in 2014.
Okay.
So as part of that, we had done some, we had done some phase one analysis, and there was some indication that there was some contamination in the soil. Right now, we don't know exactly what the root cause of it was. So we're launching kind of a phase two investigation. And as of right now, we've got several quotes from expert firms and that are professionals in the cleanup type of operation. So essentially what we did is we know we had a liability, and we recorded kind of where the best estimate was based on several of those estimates. And we're not really going to know until we get further into it, but, you know, it could be less than the amount that we've got there, but it could also be slightly more. So it's something that we're going to follow, obviously, as the remediation starts, and certainly if there's any material changes to what our accrual is, then, you know, we will certainly inform everybody.
Okay. Thanks for that, Bob. Secondly, just on the repatriation, perhaps you've discussed this in the past, but were there any tax implications from that, or will there be, or how did that run, if there were, through the cash flow?
Sure. So no, this the first $260 million really didn't have any significant tax implications on the repatriation. So it really did not have a material impact on our tax rate in the quarter.
Okay. How'd you manage that?
Well, it's a complicated subject, but basically, you know, the way you have to calculate where your repatriations are coming from and what taxes you've paid previously, with the dollar being as strong as it is relative to when we paid taxes on some of those earnings, we actually were able to be very close from an effective tax rate to what taxes we paid on those when we earned them versus where we are today. So I could go into much more of a geeky discussion on that at a later date.
Okay. I suggest you have a separate conference call on it. How about that? But just kidding. My last one, I'll turn it over. And I want to piggyback on a question or topic that Phil brought up. You know, when we've seen management changes and changes in program, we'll call it, in sales management and incentives, the results, at least from our vantage point, are bipolar. Either they're quite good initially because everyone is motivated because they recognize there's, a new, we'll call it new regime and approach to doing business. Other times it can be really difficult to manage, especially if the incentives and the goals aren't set out pretty clearly. Now, I know which side of the fence you're going to come down on, but tell me why you think this is going to be done without any disruption in customer relationships, ordering, sales, growth, et cetera. Thanks, guys, and good luck in the quarter.
Yeah, I would say my experience is indeed more the first one. But frankly, it's also not rocket science. It's basically just doing what you should be doing anyway, and following up closely, and basic things, having a weekly call, reviewing the sales pipeline, making sure that we follow up on all the opportunities, making sure people know what they're held accountable for, making sure we are in front of the right customers with the right pipeline. So it's not that we are bending everybody's lives, it's just that we basically just do the blocking and tackling, do it in a way that is kind of best practice.
Okay. Stefan, I don't mean to get too into the weeds on this, but if it's basic blocking and tackling, and to use your words, it's not rocket science, then that would suggest it would have been readily done in the first place. So what was perhaps missing previously?
Well, Yes, I think that's a fair challenge. But, you know, there are so many things that you need to do to manage a business, and sometimes certain things are kind of deprioritized. And given that a lot of other things are running right in the business, this kind of comes to the surface and needs to be addressed, I think, also looking at our growth performance in recent quarters.
Okay. Thank you for the thoughts. Again, good luck in the quarter, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of John Anderson from William Blair. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking the questions. Bob, I'm sorry if I missed this earlier, but could you quantify the total resin impact in the first quarter and what your expectations are at this point, given spot rates and pricing, for the second quarter and maybe the second half of the year?
Sure. So in the first quarter, it was slightly more than $1 million on the resin side, split kind of between food and beverage and beauty and home, slightly more in food and beverage. We don't typically give specific guidance on what assumptions we've got out there, but I would tell you that our estimates include a bigger headwind in the second quarter than what we incurred in the first quarter. And then looking out into the third and fourth, it's way too early to tell. I mean, the market's changed so much, you know, from one quarter to the next that we'd be just really guessing and speculating what the second half would bring.
Okay, great. That's helpful. One other one for me, outside of the pharma business, so kind of the more, I guess, basic consumer staple end markets that you serve, you know, we're hearing, you know, a lot, particularly, you know, domestically, but also, I guess, in Europe about, you know, price pressure related to, you know, channel shift and other kind of market dynamics such that pricing power, I guess, for many of your customers is limited at best, and there may be inherent pressure going forward. Is that something that's filtering back to you that you're seeing either to, you know, a greater or kind of lesser extent than you have in the past? Any color there would be helpful. Thank you.
Well, I mean, the pressure to be more competitive is nothing new, but I quite agree with you that our customers in the CPG space wrestle now for a few years with the fundamental shift from the baby boomers to the millennials, and then with that comes the fragmentation in the product line, with that comes the shift in distribution channels, including e-commerce, and with that comes also that they have economic pressure and they turn around to their suppliers, but that can also be a differentiating factor. I mean, we continue to drive cavity counts, we continue to increase the press sizes, we can help them with lightweighting and take out material costs, we can certainly help with automation. So part of our offering is also to be able to be more efficient and continue to drive productivity. At the same time, as I think we mentioned earlier, as things shift over to e-commerce and more get shipped by Amazon and others, there is new demand for closures and dispensing solutions that are robust enough to be tossed around in a box and thrown off a UPS truck. So there are those new opportunities. So it's part of the business.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line, follow-up from Mr. Mark Wilde from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yeah, just a couple of quick follow-ups. One, there have been some signs down in Brazil of a little improvement in activity. Are you guys seeing any of that?
Well, I think the general macroeconomic development is clearly better, or let me put it this way, declining at a slower pace. So, I mean, you had the GDP declining more than 3% this year. Depending on who you talk to, it's down 0.7, 0.5, and the huge optimists may call it a zero. Now, it's still a decline, but it's not as deep a decline as before. And there's quite some dynamic in the Brazilian marketplace with some share shifts and also a rapidly changing retail environment. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag.
Okay, that's helpful. And then, Bob, I wonder, can you just help remind us of sort of the cadence on the Stelmi ramp-up in the plant in New York this year?
Just from Congress facility? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Any last summer? So we're in the process of validating right now the finishing capacity, which is really adding about 10 to 15% downstream capacity in that product. So we're hopeful that we're going to be shipping in the second half of 2017.
And so financially, would you expect that to have an earnings impact in the second half, or, you know, is that really kind of 2018?
No, not necessarily. I mean, obviously this quarter, the injectables had nice growth of 10%. I mean, what we'll be doing is we'll be shipping components over to the Congress facility from the French facility. So it's really a shift of production from France to the U.S. on the finishing aspect of it. So if business in that division continues to grow, we have the capacity in France to absorb that by bringing in capacity in the U.S. So I would say if there's a positive impact, it's going to be more market-driven than it is going to be because of the new capacity we're bringing on board in the U.S.
So what exactly is going on up there, and what could you do incrementally over the next sort of 3 to 5 years? Because presumably you want to grow Stelmi's position in the global injectables market.
Right. So the 10 to 15%, so as we've spoken about before, you know, the elastomer components are really is a four-phase process, right? I mean, you've got to mix the rubber compound, you've got to mold it, you've got to stamp it, and then you have to wash it and finish it and package it either pre-sterilized or ready to sterilize. And so the part of capacity expansion we added in New York was that downstream, so that washing, drying, finishing capacity on the four-phase process.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. Thanks very much, and good luck in the second quarter.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from the line of Adam Josephson from KeyBanc Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Thanks, everyone. Stefan, I think Mark asked you earlier about M&A, and I just want to follow up on that. I think you responded that you're always looking at opportunities but mindful of how high multiples are. Obviously, in the packaging sector, there have been numerous large deals, and the companies have said, yeah, we appreciate that multiples are high, but interest rates are low, so that can, you know, that makes the math work. Where do you come out on that in terms of this, you know, being comfortable doing large deals just given how low interest rates are, even though you're aware of how high multiples are?
Yeah, look, I mean, I learned the hard way that you should separate the investment decisions from the financing decisions. And at the end of the day, every deal should look at really, can we create more value than the current owner? And that tends to be easier with deals that you bolt on where you have synergies that you can lift than it is deals that are very adjacent or maybe not even overlapping. So it will be easier to pay the price if you can lift the synergies and make it work for our shareholders. Than not. So I know I'm not telling you anything new, but rest assured we are mindful of that as well.
And do you have any predisposition to do small or large deals, or not necessarily?
The hurdle to make large transformative deals work is much, much higher. And as we all know, the statistics on their success rates are much more challenging than kind of the mid-sized bolt-ons. So by the very definition, those will be easier to execute and easier to generate value. Of course, you never say never, but my predisposition will certainly be to do a string of deals than a huge deal.
Thank you very much, Stefan.
Thank you. I'm showing no additional audio questions in the queue at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Tanda for any closing remarks.
Thank you. Well, appreciate you all joining us today. With this, we conclude our conference call and wish you all a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.